Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. We have a phenomenal show coming up for you today. Two Ring of Fire favorites. First, we have Cliff Schechter. He's going to be joining me to talk about Ron DeSantis's assault on Florida residents down here. And of course, how DeSantis is trying to become the next Donald Trump. And Heather Digby Parton returns to the Ring of Fire to talk about Donald Trump's dwindling influence and how his endorsements of certain candidates could in fact doom the Republicans in this year's midterms. If you want the full Ring of Fire podcast every single week, we encourage all of you to subscribe. Go to rofpodcast.com and sign up. Not only do you get the full show each week, but you also get access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire archives. And for Ring of Fire every single day, go to youtube.com/TheRingOfFire and subscribe to our channel. Everybody's wondering right now who is going to be the next Donald Trump if Donald Trump does not stay to be the current Donald Trump. It's a weird situation, but I think a lot of us looking at the situation understand that the next Donald Trump is already here and he's already out trumping Trump. And that is, of course, Ron DeSantis here in Florida. Joining me to talk about this is author, writer, and now, of course, YouTube channel Cliff Schechter. Cliff.
From what I heard, that's where all the cool people go is YouTube. So yeah, that's where I went.
And I'm loving it. It's youtube.com/C Schechter, the letter C, then Schechter. Everybody, yes. Check it out. Great channel, Cliff. Always a great guy. And of course, you're a favorite here at Ring of Fire. So welcome back.
Thank you.
We have so much to talk about right now. And I love talking with you because we always just kind of go everywhere in our conversation. So it's so much fun. But let's start right here where I am in the state of Florida. A ton of really just absolutely obscene abuses of power taking place in this state right now. And a lot of it, of course, does have to do with what I see as Ron DeSantis trying to out Trump. Yes. I think that's what's behind most of what we see right now.
Oh, I would say almost all of it. I mean, the sad thing, you know, I've talked about this a bunch, is that it's not policy anymore at this point. I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say on this channel, so I'll be careful with the words I use. But it's really, honestly, the Republican primaries are about who's a bigger a-hole, is what they're about. It's about who can be the nastiest, the cruelest, who can ignore democracy and take dictatorial-like power to beat down. We were talking about it a little earlier about bullying. Who can bully, you know, anybody from kids up on a stage who are wearing masks, which DeSantis did only a month ago or whatever, to bullying, you know, companies that don't toe the line. And I mean, that's the thing, is he's performing right now. He's performing for what Trump has radicalized. Trump and Fox and others have radicalized the Republican base into, which are these, they're like, you have to imagine like the people underneath the stairs now or something. They're like these creatures, these fire breathing creatures that just want vitriol and they want to see someone getting hurt. I mean, I hate that it's this way, but this is the truth. And DeSantis is literally just playing to that. That's what all of this is about.
Well, and, you know, DeSantis, like so many other Republican governors, obviously a lot of it all throughout the South and the Midwest, they had kind of all been going back and forth. You know, Georgia does something extreme, Florida does it, Texas does it, then Oklahoma. But really within the last month, Florida here has just taken every piece of it and put it on steroids. Like, okay, Texas, you've got an abortion ban. Well, guess what? We're going to go more extreme than that. Oh,
right.
You're banning critical race theory, whatever they think critical race theory is, up in Tennessee. Well, guess what? We're not only going to do that, we're going to ban math books because don't understand. I mean, he just wants to
They're filled with CRT, though, so be careful.
and it is ridiculous. In fact, the banning of those math books is based on a photoshopped image that Christina Pushaw I guess, saw online, and she's sharing it. She's like, here it is. And the funniest part is even the Photoshopped image isn't even critical race theory. It's actually just talking about Maya Angelou.
It's right, so ridiculous. Exactly. It's not critical race theory. And in the end, it wasn't part of the book either.
Yeah.
It was like something that a company put up, like a spread or a worksheet that they, and they took it down.
And so that's what they're, you know, that's their justification for it, of course. But they don't even need justification. They could just come out and do these things. And far too many people in these states will be like, yes, this is what we want. And meanwhile, we actually have very real problems all throughout the country, a lot of it at the state level. And that ends up getting blamed on Biden. You know, we see down here in Florida, our prices are skyrocketing, not due to inflation, due to corporate greed. Well, they're blaming Biden. DeSantis is blaming Biden. But those are his problems that he has let fester. And it's just, oh, no, I'm focusing on math books. Biden's the one to blame for all these price increases you're paying.
Right. Excuse me. And, of course, you know, part of that's also Greg Abbott blocking the trucks from coming in with food, and food's being spoiled. I mean, they're just such evil people. I don't know what else to call them. And the thing is you're right. DeSantis is in the lead now, but it's like a constant horse race with DeSantis and Abbott, each trying to, of course my phone rings, each trying to be more nasty than the other. Because in the end, look, there are some others that are trying to compete. Kim Reynolds up in Iowa, or what's her name? The cowboy hat wearing one, Gnome, in South Dakota. But those aren't big states. Those aren't states that like Republicans need to hold on to or need to win. They can try all they want. It doesn't matter. It's not going to, you know, they're not going to be the ones to go to the front of the line. It's going to be DeSantis or Abbott because of the states they're from, because their personas, because the guys they are. And so they're each trying to out-awful the other one, because again, this sad state of affairs we've come to where literally that's how you get a Republican nomination, is by being a more awful human being. And you're right. I mean, DeSantis, it's like one thing after another, the abortion ban and the math books. And now today taking away the, you know, taking away the Disney's special tax status. And, you know, there'll be something else tomorrow and the next day. And because that's it. It's all just about playing to the mouth breathers and being a Republican nominee for president.
And here's the thing, though. And, you know, you touched on this. When you have Abbott actually doing these things, you have DeSantis actually doing these things, and then you compare that with Donald Trump. What is Donald Trump doing? Well, Donald Trump is going out there still crying about the 2020 election and getting in fights with his friends. That's bad for Trump, because when suppose we actually have a real Republican primary in 2024 and you put these people up on stage, Abbott gets to brag about the things he actually did. DeSantis will do the same. Ted Cruz, I'm sure, will attempt to. But then Trump has nothing. And that is actually what is starting to worry some of those advisors in Trump world, saying, these people are accomplishing things. You're still talking about something that's now 18 months old that nobody wants to hear about anymore. And that's why I do think DeSantis has emerged as the new Trump. And honestly, probably a far more dangerous Trump, because he is accomplishing these things.
Correct. First of all, Trump, I mean, Trump, part of Trump's obsessiveness, nastiness, vindictiveness, you know, was a lot of what was appealing to people. But they're all, you know, in that Republican base. But there always were these times where he took certain things too far because he was so obsessed with them that nobody else cared about. Remember I'm talking about like the toilets flushing constantly, like the water in the toilets is terrible. Everybody's like, what are you talking about? Dude, like, go take your meds and take a nap or something, man. Well, this is, you know, he can't let the election go because it's part of his ego. It's like this, it's the double-edged sword of his obsessions, which worked for him at times, but now he can't let it go. Most people on the Republican Party didn't want to hear this anymore 6 months after the election. It's the reason why he unendorsed, you know, Mo Brooks, who was one of his most staunch defenders in Alabama, because Mo Brooks is like, why are we still talking about this? Even the other crazy people have looked at Donald Trump and said, you're freaking crazy. And so I do. I think there's even a point where these right-wing nuts are like, you know, are at a place where the rest of us were at, like right after the election. They're like, okay, enough. Talk about what, you know, do things and talk about what you're going to do. And DeSantis is doing that. They're awful things. He's hurting people. He basically whistled past the graveyard on COVID and let God knows how many people die. You know, he and Abbott can have a die-off where they can see Abbott can be like, I let more people die when I didn't fix the power lines, or I let more people die when I, you know, when I did this. Or, I mean, they're both awful human beings, but they're doing things, right? They're doing things that their you know, base, their bloodlust base wants. So I agree. All Trump's doing is just hanging out, you know, eating potato chips and and sweating at Mar-a-Lago. And so I do. I think his advisors are very worried. It was interesting. I'll say this quickly, Farron. You know, he did bring up, like, I don't remember when this was, a couple weeks ago, when they asked if he was going to run for re-election. I found it really interesting that for the first time he was like, well, if my health is up to it. Trump would never, ever bring that up unless that was a way of him getting out of doing something he didn't want to do. This is the guy, strong like Tiger, that, you know, drunk Ronnie Jackson was saying was going to live till he was like 380, till he's like Methuselah or something, right? But now we're like, now he's saying his health. I have a feeling he's worried he's going to lose to these guys, and he's putting up an out ramp if he needs it.
Right. And yeah, I agree with you 100%, because I think even if Trump had health problems, I mean, he would never admit it, you know.
Right.
So him actually bringing that up, it does raise a red flag, not because I think you have health. Well, I do think you have health issues. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think you would ever, like, he could have a tumor growing out of the back of his head with its own face on it, and he would still run for office, and everybody would say that's how a head is supposed to look. So him talking about that, I do think he sees himself diminishing in power. He'll never admit it. But I think another very telling thing was this past weekend, and we got to see the video all over social media, Roger Stone walking up to Trump at Mar-a-Lago with the, hey, how you doing? Pulls him in close, as Ron DeSantis is a piece of shit. Okay.
Yep.
You know, I would love to know the rest of that conversation, because obviously the camera's cut off. But Trump understands. He has people telling him, like, this guy, and it's,
yep,
Roger Stone doesn't
inevitable.
Think he is, but it's Roger Stone thinks this guy's going to beat you and you're doing nothing about it.
Right. I mean, and look, it's inevitable. I mean, look at any despotic regime, right? Like, if you're the number two guy, if you were next to Saddam Hussein or Idi Amin or Mao, at some point, like, you know, you see them looking at you a little funny, you're like, they're probably going to kill me. You know, like they love them. You know, he endorsed DeSantis initially for governor. They love them until they get to the point where they get their own media and they start getting powerful and they become a threat. So Trump loved the guy, you know, when he was president. Once he was gone, all these guys were going to jockey for power, because that's all they care about in the end. I mean, they've proven it once again, right? Like, we were talking as the show was starting about these attacks on Disney. You know, they claim they're for free markets. They're not for free markets. They're not for balanced budgets. They're not for being tough on Russia. They're not for any number of things they say they're for. What they are for in the end is, like, doing whatever is advantageous to hold and gain power. And right now, DeSantis and Abbott and sure others, but they're the two, I think, at the front because of where they're from, like, they see this opportunity. And so I think you've got purposely, you know, Roger Stone saying that to make sure the media can hear it. You know, like, he's trying in his own way, Trump is, to diminish DeSantis. I'm not sure what he can do from there to do it. You know, maybe he's still got friendly people in various prosecutors' offices and he can get some you know, investigations started. But, and I think, actually, I should say quickly, that's the other problem, is I think a lot of other Republicans are just tired of all the legal stuff. They're tired of the fact that the Attorney General in New York and the January 6th committee and, you know, the DOJ and Fulton County in Georgia, and just there's a billion different investigations into Trump, and, like, none of them are, they sure be investigations into Abbott for why he didn't go and make sure that the power lines could survive a winter storm. There should be investigations into DeSantis, why he hid science and hid the number of people dying and did things so more people died of COVID. I can think of a lot of investigations of both those guys that should be happening, but there aren't any that I'm aware of. So, like, all these legal troubles around Trump, and I think a lot of other conservatives, particularly the funders, they're just like, we don't need this. You know what I mean?
Well, and, you know, you and I actually had a very interesting conversation a couple days ago, you know, not on Ring of Fire here, but just a friendly chat. And you and I got into the issue. Obviously, we talk about Republicans a lot, but we also started talking about people like Joe Manchin. You know,
yep.
Manchin is a huge problem for the Democratic Party in getting anything at all done. Kyrsten Sinema, same way. So, of course, we look at the Republicans and we see this utter insanity of them actually doing things to harm us. Like, they're causing real harm. So, on the Democratic side, we have people blocking progress. You know, it prevents us from moving forward, but hey, at least it's not us moving backwards. And I bring that up to bring up this point. You don't like Joe Manchin. I don't like Joe Manchin.
No.
Everybody outside of West Virginia does not like Joe Manchin.
I think a lot of people even in West Virginia. And in fact, he got into a lawsuit with his brother over some finances. His own brother doesn't like him. So, you know, just to be clear.
And the problem is the voters in West Virginia, unfortunately, do. And so we're looking at a situation right now. And this is what people have to understand, whether it's the Republicans or Democrats. Oh, we don't have our preferred candidate. We need somebody that's more progressive or somebody that every place is different. You cannot run a campaign with a you know, Bernie Sanders, who I supported, but you couldn't run Bernie Sanders in my district where Matt Gaetz is running and have him win. You simply could not do it.
Nope.
So as bad as Joe Manchin is, and I want him out of office, it's not going to happen. And if it does happen, you end up with somebody worse than Joe Manchin. And as you and I discussed, a lot of it has to do with I'm in Florida, a red state. You're in Ohio, a true swing state.
We're both in what 8 years ago were swing states that now, if we're being honest, we'd call reddish purple states.
Yeah.
Democrats can still win, but we lean red.
But we get to see firsthand really both sides. And
yes.
So we, and I'm not saying you and I are just, we're the best because of this. But it is
the best for a lot of other reasons.
It's a different perspective than what some of these other folks get. If you're in your, you know, very liberal LA bubble, of course you think that, you know, everything is liberal and everything is great and we can be more liberal. But when you're out here in red state America, it sucks to have to say it, but I'm telling you, you can't. You know?
You need a coalition. That's the whole thing about democracy. Look, Joe Manchin is uniquely terrible. Okay, he's uniquely terrible in that I honestly think Kyrsten Sinema may have caved if Manchin weren't standing there in the way that he was. He has harmed us. I mean, some folks were asking questions like, can you think of a past case where one Democratic senator did this much damage? Because that's one of the reasons that Biden's approval rating has fallen and some of the other things have happened. And again, you know, you need to be able to, what so many people can't do in politics is separate emotion from analysis.
Yeah.
My emotion is I can't stand Joe Manchin. My analysis is if I'm voting for him or a Republican and he's the 50th vote, I'm voting for him. Like, I mean, I don't understand that there's not even a debate to be had here. I mean, what in your state, Nikki Fried has done some controversial things over the past couple of days.
Oh, I know.
I think what she's doing is self-immolation to her campaign and completely inane. But if she's the nominee over Annette Tedeo and Charlie Crist, who I think are the three, maybe I'm missing one or two other folks running, that's who I'm supporting if I live in Florida. Like, these are not hard decisions. You can't make decisions like you make. Like, you know, here's what somebody always said to me, an old political consultant I was friends with, who's like, you're voting for who best represents your values. You're not marrying them. Okay? Like, you're not saying you love Joe Manchin or Nikki Fried. You don't have to spend the rest of your lives with them. But my God, look at what the Republican Party has done. So, and you even need to separate the situations like themselves. I mean, so what do I mean by that? Kyrsten Sinema, when she's up in 2024, she's got something like a 12% approval rating in the Democratic Party, right? In Arizona. Arizona's trending Democratic. Biden won there. We've won the last two Senate races. We've won a couple other statewide races. She can be tossed in a primary and we can get somebody more progressive in Arizona. And she should be. So that's a realistic analysis, not based on my emotion, because I can't stand either of them. But a realistic analysis of West Virginia is it's like the third most Republican state, I think, in the country. I think Trump got 67% or 8% or whatever there. We're not getting anybody else besides Joe Manchin, who's a Democrat. So if Joe is Manchin's that last one who's going to give us that extra vote, we got to keep him. If you want to say we don't need him anymore, if we can knock off, you know, used car salesman Marco Rubio in your state and the two lunatics, we can hold off J.D. Vance and Josh Mandel and put Tim Ryan in office in this state and a bunch of others, and then we end up having 54, 55 senators. Yeah, at that point, you may consider Manchin not worth the trouble. But if he's the 50th or 51st or something vote, we need him. And, like, people need to understand that.
Yeah, and of course, just like we do, continue call him out every time he does these things.
But absolutely.
The best bet is not to replace him with, you know, the next Jeff Merkley or Elizabeth Warren. The best bet is to is to make him irrelevant, like you said.
Yes.
You know, have enough Democrats where if Manchin says, I'm going to vote with Republicans, it's all right, we... whatever, go do your thing, man. We're not even
paying
attention.
No one was talking to you anyhow. Dude.
Yeah. So that's the goal here. And again, the reason it is important is because of what we are fighting on this other side, with people yes. literally fighting to live their lives as who they are. And they're not even yes. allowed. I mean, Florida this week, at, you know, after the math books, after the Disney thing, then the health department issues this new decree where you can't even... you can't change a kid's pronouns. You can't let them change a pronouns. You can't let them change clothing to the opposite gender. We have now, from the state health department, and this just...
Are you serious?
Yes, you cannot wear the opposite gender's clothing for these kids and send them out. It's...
What would glam metal bands do?
Yeah.
Like my 15-year-old is a drummer in a rock band and loves Aerosmith and like Guns N' Roses. And like sometimes because of that, he's like worn like women's leather coats and things because it's cool stuff. So seriously, if he were in your state, they would, what would they do? Would they grab my kid and like rip the clothes off him? Are they crazy?
That's the level of insanity that these Republicans are inflicting upon people. And so we have to understand that, listen, Manchin sucks. Is he better than every Republican out there? I think so, yes. And I've often said, you know, Manchin actually just was down here in Florida, I think this past weekend, at a massive Republican fundraiser. They were raising money for him. And they want him to run as a Republican in 2024. And I talked about this in a segment. I said... I would not want him to be a Republican president, but I guarantee you if he were, he'd be the best Republican president that we have had in, you know, 60 years.
Yes.
Because he's...
certainly since, like, Gerald Ford, I would say.
Yeah.
In terms of how moderate, yeah.
But he's still probably worse than all of the Democrats, better than all of the Republicans. So he's in this weird situation. Same thing with Sinema. Yes, she needs to get out of office. We need to do something about that. But we also...
if she's the nominee and you live in Arizona and it's her versus a Republican,
yeah.
You must... I mean, you're crazy not to vote for her. Again, like, this is not about your personal anger. It's not about, like, your resentment for these people for how they behave. I have all of that, too. But in the end, think about, like, you know, what bills get passed. And think about the fact that how close we were to, you know, and not... I mean, we had... at least three Republican votes, thankfully, but we maybe could have not gotten our Supreme Court justice on the court. You know, like, these things matter. And so, you know, separate, you know, as they used to say, compartmentalize it. Over here, you know, you can hate Manchin and Sinema as much as you want, but when it comes time to vote, if they are the nominee, and I think there's a good chance that you can stop Sinema from being the nominee if you're in Arizona and get somebody better like Ruben Gallego, who's been making noises about primarying her. But I promise you, unless, like, something insane happens, the level of, like, the aliens from Independence Day coming down right now, you're not going to get a better Democrat than Joe Manchin in West Virginia. You're just not, because Democrats are an endangered species there. They barely exist.
Well, and, you know, it's things like that, too, that really kind of bug me, I guess I would say. Like with Mitch McConnell and his Senate race, I forget who the Democrat was up against him. Who?
Amy McGrath.
And there's all of this money, millions and millions and millions of dollars flowing from all over the country into Amy McGrath. And nothing against her. I know she was a very conservative Democrat. But at the same time, you're not going to unseat Mitch McConnell. You're absolutely not. They love him in Kentucky. I mean, each state is so different. And I do wish people got out a little bit more, whereas down here in Florida, Yes, DeSantis, his approval rating is over 50%, but it is below 60%. So there's room. There is room.
And we need to do better, you know, our side in getting the message out there about who he is. Some of this is on us, you know, and I don't blame you and me. I can blame myself for plenty of things, so I'm not making excuses. But there are actual groups tied to the Democratic Party whose job it is to do these things. And I don't know what they're doing. Pick the three narratives you want to tell about him, because there's 15 different negative ones. Pick the three that are easy for people to remember and go at them and repeat them every day, every minute, constantly. You can knock that guy's approval rating below 50%. You really can. It's not Alabama. It's not Kentucky. It's Florida. You lean, 3 points Republican or something like that at this point, maybe less, you know, and that's where we are too here. Sherrod Brown wins here because he knows how to run here. You know, I mean, we elected the Supreme Court justice here last year, statewide. She knew Jennifer Bruner. She knew how to run here. She was a former Secretary of State and had some name recognition and ran a smart race. Like, we can do it. You guys can do it. You've elected statewide Democrats. Like, you know, just please, the organizations whose job it is to message, can you guys, like, go and tell people the true story of DeSantis? You know, please?
Yeah.
We're begging you.
And you know, I'll tell you another thing we need is we need more Stacey Abrams. We absolutely need what she did in Georgia. And yes, I'm giving her almost all of the credit for that. Is nothing short of miraculous, but it's also proof that, look, when you put in this groundwork, and it took years of groundwork, this is not just something you pop in for 3 months for an election and say, I'm changing things. She worked for so long and so hard to actually change things, and it worked. And that's why the Republicans in Georgia panicked. They passed that hugely, you know, suppressive new voting law. And it was basically because Stacey Abrams.
She was so successful.
Yep. She got up and she did something. She didn't sulk after her loss. She didn't sit there and say, oh, well, this group didn't come out, or this group was too mean to me. It was none of that. It was like, you know what? All right, fine. I'm going to change the state. I'm going to make things better. You know, none of this. The establishment was against me. The progressives were against. You know, we spend so much time, I think, on the left blaming one another instead of doing what Stacey.
And our labels are actually often so stupid.
They are. Because, they truly are.
Because you could, if you looked at who I've worked for and my record, you know, and everything, I wrote ads for Joe Biden this past time. I'm establishment. But then I also did work for Ned Lamont when he took on Joe Lieberman and tried to kick him out. I'm progressive, you know, like, I mean, in the end, I'm more, I consider myself progressive, but I also consider myself a Democrat. And Democrats, as you pointed out before, will always be better than Republicans. Always. So, you know, you work for who's there, and you work, I mean, again, who is the best person of who's available? This is not like, you know, we're not in Disney World, sorry, I just got that in there, where everything's perfect and wonderful, except for, you know, in Ron DeSantis's world, where dreams come true or whatever. You're in a world where you have a set number of candidates, and whoever the best one is, in your estimation, that's as good as it's going to get. And they may disagree with you on a half dozen issues or a dozen issues or whatever, but okay. Like, you go and you do your best, because if they will make things a little bit better, or a lot better than the person who's there now, than the Republican. I mean, it's common sense. And I just wish people would step back from all the emotion and name calling you pointed out. Progressive establishment, blah, blah. You're evil. You suck. You know, you didn't get behind Bernie. You didn't get behind Hillary. I mean, can we just let all that stupid stuff go? We're on the same side. We want the same things. You know, even if we don't always believe in exactly the same way to get there. Like, the end goals are the same, you know?
Yeah. And you know, I still to this day don't understand what all the anti-Elizabeth Warren stuff was about in 2020. I still don't get that. And I mean, there's so many people out there that are still like, oh, I can't believe she she didn't endorse Bernie when you wanted her to. Besides, what does that mean? That all of her policies, which I got to tell you, policy wise, in 2020, she was kind of, you know, really the top.
She owned it, man.
She
and
did.
Some of her policies are still that she came up with are still out there debated now. Things like the wealth tax and other things. We're talking about stuff that she came up with.
People want to hate her. I guess that's your choice. I love her. I don't hold anything against her. She did what she chose to do. And if you want to go out there and whine and moan about something Elizabeth Warren did or didn't do at a certain time that pleased you, well, guess what? Get the hell out of the way, because you're a Joe Manchin just in a different way. You're the one blocking progress at this point.
Yeah, I don't really care if you come from the far, what's called either the radical left or the radical center. Like, if you're in either wing of the Democratic Party where you're blocking things from happening because you're too good for the rest of us, we're all too left for you, or we're all too corporate for you, or whatever your insult du jour is, well, then you're the problem. You know, there used to be an old saying, and I heard you curse, so I know I can say it, which is, if you walk around all day, every day, you know, and you're like, wow, that guy's an asshole, that guy's an asshole, and everybody else is an asshole, it turns out you're the asshole. That's the actual truth if you find enough other people, because it says something about you. So you know what? Like, let that stuff go. Elizabeth Warren may not have done exactly what you wanted when you wanted her to do it. I may not agree with Elizabeth Warren 100% of policies. I'm sure I don't. Don't care. She's done a great job. She's come up with a lot of great stuff. I would have been happy to support her for president. I'm happy to support her right now. You know, hell, if she wanted to be Senate Majority Leader right now, count me as somebody who would jump in behind there and be very excited about it. But, I mean, you know, just save the ire for the people that are trying to turn us into a fascist country, please.
Yeah.
Like, save the ire for the authoritarians who are trying to overthrow democracy. I mean, come on.
You know, it really is amazing. You know, you can either waste all your time complaining that we – you know, don't have student loan debt forgiveness yet, which I talk about that all the time, too. We need it.
Sure.
We should have it. But you can either piss and moan about that and go pout, or you can also say, well, we may not have student loan debt forgiveness, but they're literally killing people over here on this other side. They're taking away suicide prevention protection from this other side. They're going to be killing women with their policies. So I guess I'm okay, you know, with not having the debt forgiveness, if it means saving lives of people over here. I mean, it's such a
perspective,
really,
is what's really, really needed here. And beyond even those lives, every single thing that we care about, every single thing that we want to see happen during our lifetimes, if we lose our democracy, none of that happens.
Right.
If we become like, no, do I think we're going to probably become like a Nazi Germany? I don't. Could I see us becoming Hungary? Absolutely. There's a reason they love Orban. He took a liberal democracy and he turned it to an illiberal democracy. Oh, they still have elections and people still get elected. Look at your state legislatures, your gerrymandered state legislatures. It's like that. You'll still elect. I mean, I'm talking about Ohio, you know, where they're still trying to fight fair maps that we should have. You know, out of about 99 state house members or whatever it is, yeah, we'll still elect 35 who are complete liberals. They'll just will never be enough to actually do anything that we want done. That is an illiberal democracy. You keep having elections, there's the facade you're in a democracy, but then you have stuff like that happen. You have 35-year-old, you know, who look like they're 12, you know, judges who know nothing about health policy, overturning, you know, mask requirements on airplanes. Somebody who was rated not qualified by the ABA, somebody who had never tried a case before and never has in her life, you know, was probably still coloring in crayon books when Trump came in and said, we're going to make her a judge. And those Republicans who were just so freaked out about Ketanji Brown Jackson's qualifications, even though she was more qualified than all of them put together, public defender and all the things she did, they had no problems rubber stamping the Mizell, I guess is her name, this judge at the age of 33 to put her on a court when she had literally not even sure she knew what the law was. You know what I mean? Like, have you seen that decision?
Oh, yeah. Like, and she'll be there for, you know, as long as her health keeps
2070?
Up. 2070? 50 years. I mean, you know, maybe 60 years, depending on how far medical advancements come. And
I will likely be dead, and she'll still be on that court. And of old age, if I'm lucky enough to get there.
And that's what's so terrifying about this. And you know what? Just one final point here. When you bring up Ketanji Brown Jackson, that's a good example of probably like the most progressive pick Biden could have done for the Supreme Court. You know, there were plenty of other, you know, more corporatist people. So you also can't just say, well, Biden's not progressive enough. Look, he's not progressive enough on certain things. Sure. But we got a massive win with that Supreme Court pick. And that is something everybody should celebrate, you know, for so many different reasons, but especially the public defender background. Yep. Representation matters. Somebody coming from that background matters. And that is a huge deal.
And where she is, you are 100% right that she's probably going to join. She's a brilliant jurist also, and she's probably going to join Sotomayor as this sort of conscience, if I can say the word right, of the Supreme Court. We'll have now these two strong female women of color left voices speaking out who know what they're talking about because who've had to go through things. Most of us, me and you certainly haven't had to go through in our lives to get to where they are. And I'm sorry, unless you have to kick me off for time quickly, because I just get so tired of it. Is Biden perfect? You know, this and that, whatever. The number of executive orders on climate, on guns that have improved things. That COVID bill was one of the biggest bills and most successful bills since LBJ in terms of child tax credit, in terms of getting shots into arms. So at least even with anti-vaxxers, we got closer to 70%, which reinvigorated our economy to the point where we're at 3.6% unemployment. And, you know, we were creating 500,000 jobs a month. He helped pass an infrastructure bill with Republicans to actually do it. That we have two bridges near here in Cincinnati that were considered structurally unsound. I haven't driven over them in years because I don't want my kids to go flying into the water. And they're now fixing them with that money. I mean, I'm sorry, and that's creating jobs for people too. I'm not saying he's perfect, but my God, to act like this guy hasn't come in and done a bunch of very progressive things is just to not tell the truth.
There are plenty of accomplishments, but part of the reason why people aren't talking about these is because the Democrats are also terrible at messaging.
Well, that's a whole other conversation. We sucked.
Because those are the things that should be running in ads right now. And you know, another message for the Democratic Party, you don't have to wait for campaigns to run ads. You know, you can buy airtime at any point in any year. And
it's like available and you can purchase it with like goods and services and like the whole economy and everything. I mean, you're so right. I didn't mean to cut you off, but like,
it's fine.
This is you went into one of my areas because I just lose it on this, like paid media, but not even that. You can like have a press conference a week to tell you, here's the terrible stuff the Republicans did this week. We're going to come out in front of Congress, and in every state house where you've got a gerrymandered state house, we're going to have Democrats come out and hold a press conference. You can come up with interesting events. Like we did events here, you know, in 2018 to get media attention. We had a big Trump chicken we brought out.
Yeah.
Things that will get the media's attention so that they actually pay attention to stuff. You can do that. Like you can do paid media. You can do earned media. You can do social media. You can be on there every day with the same tweets saying to people, here's a reminder of what Biden has done. Here's a reminder of what Trump did. So it doesn't go down the memory hole. Like you can be doing these things constantly. It's called messaging. It's marketing 101. Please.
Well, I mean, that's why Trump, every time he's in front of a camera, says the 2020 election was stolen. And now you have a majority of Republicans that actually do believe it. So maybe Democrats, maybe use some of their strategy, not, of course, to lie to people.
Right. So he lied about that. So what if every time Biden and everybody got in front of a camera, we just said we have the best jobs economy in 60 years, which is true. What if we just said that every time?
That
would seem to be a good idea.
We could. And if they want to, you know, go the route of lying, Biden could go up there and just be like, hey, you know what? There's no unemployment. Everybody in this country has a job. I mean, no, he shouldn't do that.
That's true.
But really, with the amount of lies coming from the other side, because that's all they have, the Democratic messaging just, I mean, it doesn't exist. And as you've just kind of pointed out, like there are so many things to do. So, hey, strategists, lobbyists, whoever you are, if you're watching, if you're listening, there you go. There's Please, lots
do it
to do.
In a coordinated way with paid and earned and social, all coordinated, and spokespeople out there and policy initiatives and everything, and make it all into a narrative about who you are. What's your story? Here's who we are. Here's what we came into and fixed. Here's the bad guys. They did these terrible things. We're the good guys. We came in, we fixed those things. And here's three examples. And your life is better because of it. This, like, it just drives me nuts. It's not difficult and we don't do it. And it's, and that's why you're right. And that's why people, it's why some of the reason Biden's numbers are so low. I mean, there's other reasons. Mainstream media is awful and the right wing media lies all the time. But you know what? Like, here's my hope. Democrats can just tell the truth as often and effectively as Republicans lie. That's all I want out of life.
And it's,
if we could just do that.
Yeah. It's very easy to do, but for some reason we're not doing it. Hey, Cliff Schechter, the YouTube channel is youtube.com/C Schechter.
And Schechter is S-C-H-E-C-T-E-R. We cut off the second H on the boat over from, by the way, Odessa, one of the places that Putin has chosen to attack. So I take it even more personally. But yeah, it's youtube.com/C Schechter, S-C-H-E-C-T-E-R. I'm going to be doing a lot of commentaries today. I can't promise you I'll be nearly as good as Farron because Farron is Farron, but I will do my best. Please come by and check the channel out.
Absolutely. And Cliff, again, you're welcome here anytime. We love having you on. This has been a wonderful conversation today. We covered so much more than I even thought we would, but all of it very informative, all of it fun. And I hope everybody enjoyed it. And again, if you want more of it, youtube.com/C Schechter. Follow him on Twitter at Cliff Schechter, I believe it is.
That's right. Yep.
I knew your name. so thank you, Cliff,
it's
so
a
much.
Start, baby.
And
thanks, buddy. I really appreciate it.
We will have you on again. Thank you.
Sounds like a plan. Take care.
That's it for this week's free portion of the Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want even more, including the rest of this week's show and access to the entire Ring of Fire archives, go sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com.